Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's time to play the game. Time to play the game.
It may be the nighttime,
but the sports talk doesn't stop.
Sports talk radio that's live, local,
and not for the faint of heart.
Oh, you didn't know?
Sometimes angry.
Loud noises!
Telling it like it is.
You insulted him a little bit. You got a little out of order yourself.
And pretty much always right.
Don't ever argue with the big dog. Big dog is always right.
Text or call 404-741-0929 and be part of the show.
Well, we're waiting.
Live from the Kia Studios, it's time for the John Chuckery Show. Serving you up sports on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And we welcome you in on a Thursday night on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show coming to you live, taking you till 11 o'clock this evening. Don't forget to download our Radio.com app. Lots of crazy things going on as 6 o'clock tomorrow. The shelter in place goes statewide, so we know you're not in the car nearly as often. So download that Radio.com app to make sure that you can always hear us on any device and at any part of the day. The cool new feature about listening back to anything in real time over the past 24 hours. Social media for the station, another good way to keep up with us. That's all at 929 The Game. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. Give us a follow on all of those different platforms. The best way to always be a part of this particular show that you listen to at night would be through our personal Twitter handles. You can reach me. I am at JMCH316, at JMCH316. That is all your water cooler talking points 3 to 6 months in advance of anybody else that is out there. He is back in Midtown behind the glass producing this show, as always. Jarvis in the building. Follow him on Twitter at JarvisD90. So plenty of NFL and Falcons talk to get into still. Dante Fowler kind of making his way around the media landscape today. Did a conference call. Was also on with our Andy and Randy on the midday show. So we will break down in several clips what Dante Fowler had to say and kind of go back through. I'll be honest with you, I've not listened to the interview. You know how we do it here on this particular show is that I'm a working stiff. I work all day long. I don't really get a chance to listen to the station very much during the day, except sometimes in the car and things like that, going to lunch. But, you know, as a working stiff, I don't get to hear a lot of the things that go on throughout the day, which is probably good and bad, but it's good because it gives me a chance that when we get to our show, I can take interviews like a Dante Fowler, Arthur Blank, or whoever is on the particular station, or, you know, Thomas or whoever, and give my organic reaction to what I hear and respond to what they are saying. So we will break down the Dante Fowler interview from Andy and Randy a little bit later on in the show. We will be joined by the gentleman that covers the Atlanta Falcons, the beat writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, our buddy D. Orlando Ledbetter, will join us coming up tonight as well as we're getting closer and closer and closer. 3 weeks from tonight will be the start of the NFL draft. So 3 weeks from tonight, as today is April 2nd, 3 weeks from tonight, the start of the NFL draft will take place, and I think we're all kind of ready for it. You know, a lot going on in the world and a lot of things happening, obviously, around here in the state of Georgia. So we'll talk to him in the show as well. So I want to get started with, let's get into some Falcon stuff, because here's the newest and latest and greatest thing, because obviously we're all searching for content right now about what to talk about. And going through, you know, looking at my Falcons notes and things like that for the Falcons flyover tonight and what we want to talk about, one story that I keep seeing pop up is the idea of the Falcons and cornerback. Now, I've said for weeks now, I really believe, based upon what this roster needs and where they're at, that I do think the Falcons are going to end up going. It's not, I'm telling you, not what I personally want. And we will do our draft. You know, I do my draft every year where I draft based upon how I would draft, not what I think the Falcons will draft. We will do that, you know, the week leading up to the actual draft itself, been doing it for the last several years. And of course, if I'd gotten the chance to draft, we'd have a Super Bowl by now. But anyway, that aside, we know about the cornerback position and how much of a need that is. While I still believe that pass rush is the single, solitary, most important thing that the Falcons have, finding another starting corner, because I do not believe with Isaiah Oliver and Kendall Sheffield that they have two guys that are ready to be starters in the NFL week in, week out. And obviously with the loss of Desmond Trufant, who is in Detroit right now, I think it's even magnified more. So the idea of drafting a C.J. Henderson or some type of player at 16 has a lot of validity to it. But much like when we talk about going up to Chase Young, some people are starting to ask the question about, should the Falcons go up and go after a different Ohio State player? And that would be the cornerback for the Ohio State Buckeyes. That would be Jeff Okudah, who, by all accounts, without question, as we say in the wrestling podcast world, is the number one corner in this draft. Now, the problem, if you're a Falcon fan, thinking about trying to get a guy like Okudah, by the way, he's 6 foot, 6'1", 200 pounds, okay? So he does have the measurables that a guy like Dan would like, okay? He's got, you know, excellent size, got excellent ball skills. I mean, he's, you know, he's the prototypical cornerback for what you'd love to have in the NFL today. So he meets all of that criteria. He's not one of these undersized guys or any sort of thing like that. You know, he's a guy that, you know, in a against pass happy teams, you know, he can really thrive and take on the top corners out there. We also know that Ohio State has a pretty good history of putting a lot of corners and safeties in the league. That has been, much like LSU, kind of one of their top positions of strength they put in the NFL over this last decade, is the number of corners and safeties, the number of defensive backs that have come in. So those guys have a good pedigree of, you know, they develop themselves well in college and, you know, how it translates to the NFL. Not everybody's been a hit, but there's been plenty of guys that have done well. But to get up to Okudah, you're probably still having to talk about not two, but three. And the reason is because that the Detroit Lions are sitting at the number three draft position. And the Detroit Lions are in dire, desperate need of getting a corner. And a few reasons why here. Even though they did pick up Desmond Trufant, they did lose their Pro Bowl cornerback in Darius Slay, who went on to the Philadelphia Eagles. So for a team that was the fourth worst pass defense in the entire NFL last season, while I like Desmond Trufant, you know, the time may be moving away where you can look at him as a guaranteed number one corner. They are in dire need of a cornerback. So realistically, okay, if you're talking about trying to get Jeff Okudah instead of sitting back and just kind of hoping and wondering about a C.J. Henderson or something like that, you're going to have to get up to three. And I think it's as big a slam dunk as what there is in the draft, just because unless you're telling me somebody gives them some ridiculous offer to go up and get quarterback at that position, Okudah, if Detroit's at three, they're taking Okudah. So my thing would be, hell, if you're going to three, you go to two to get Chase Young. There would be no reason to try to trade up to number three and give up that many assets without going to get number two and then guaranteeing Chase Young. Now you may say, well, you know, the Redskins may not want to do all that. If you're putting together a package that would be sexy enough for the Lions to get out of the three spot, you can certainly find a package that's sexy enough to make the Redskins get out of the two spot and one additional spot. And I forget what that pick is worth as far as the point differential. You know, the picks all have these points that are valued to them. So you'd have to give up, obviously, you know, some more assets. But at the same time, to me, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to move up to three and not go to number two and go get Chase Young. Now, it only makes sense to go up to number three if Chase Young doesn't go one or two, right? That's it. So, you know, it's good. I mean, obviously, you'd love to see, you know, the best corner of the draft end up on the Falcons. But I think the idea that realistically of going up to get a guy like him at that high of a position, that would not be a guy that I would give up tons of assets for. As much as this team needs a solid cornerback and a guy who can step in, look, without enough of a pass rush, as good as Okuda may be, most of these guys that come into the league in their first year are going to have plenty of struggles. You know, it's a tough adjustment in the NFL because it's such a passing game, and the skill set of the quarterbacks and wide receivers is unlike anything that you're going to see. Listen, with all due respect to, you know, Jeff Okuda, okay, take Illinois' quarterback wide receiver, or take Rutgers quarterback wide receiver, or Indiana's quarterback wide receiver. That ain't nothing like what you see in the NFL. Shutting that, heck, even take Michigan, okay? With all due respect to Shea Patterson, he's a nice quarterback, okay? Shea Patterson. He's a nice quarterback. Ain't nothing like what you see in the NFL and the skill set and the accuracy that those guys have with it. So it's an interesting thought. Obviously, he's the best corner. He does fill a need. But I think the realistic idea of going up that high to get him, you know, it'd be one thing if you're telling me you have to get to 7 or 8 or 9 to go get him, but you're going to have to get to 3. Detroit's not letting him slide with one of the worst pass defenses. Their Pro Bowl corner gone now. They're not letting him slide down any further than 3. So, like I said, if you're going to 3, go to 2 and go get Chase Young at that point. So, we'll talk more about the draft. I do, I still anticipate the idea that corner is very much in play for the first pick for the Atlanta Falcons. All right, when we get back, now that the offense is loaded up with players, is it time to start talking about the importance of that offensive coordinator? We'll discuss all of that next. It is the John Chuckery Show. We're coming to you live here on a Thursday night for the full four, as always, from Parts Unknown, Sports Radio, 910 The Game, and on the Radio.com app. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. Back on the John Chuckery Show. Hanging out with you here on a Thursday night. 404-741-0929. That is the phone line. That is also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. It is up and running, so if you want to be a part of the show, you can hit us up there as well. Don't forget to download the Radio.com app. Be sure to catch us there. You know, that's the best way nowadays, honestly, when you're talking about not being in your car as often, and we know you want to listen to the station, so check us out there. Don't forget to give us a follow on social media. The station is at 929 The Game. Jarvis, do we have some breaking news? Because I'm reading some stuff online that have we got any confirmation yet? We've got D'Orlando Ledbetter coming up, but I hope what I'm reading about some things is not true. And the rumor that I'm, and Jarvis, I got the station turned down because the feedback is so high in my ear, but there are some reports out there that Calvin Ridley's been traded. I have not gotten any kind of confirmation. Maybe you want to check in with D-Led on that, but let's see. I mean, because the reports that are out there are saying about Calvin Ridley being traded to the Las Vegas Raiders, I should say. So I don't know if that's for a draft pick this year for the Raiders' first round draft pick this year. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't want to spread around a bunch of rumor and innuendo, but there are some reports out there. People are asking me on the text line if that is true or not. So we do have D'Orlando Ledbetter going to come on the show tonight. So Once again, timing is everything. We seem like we're better to be lucky than good with everything that, goes on. But let's assume Calvin Ridley is still an Atlanta Falcon, and he's not going anywhere. So as we've talked about the idea of this newfangled Falcons offense and all the new pieces that have been added to it with new tight end, new starting running back, the offensive line, ideally a healthy group, and, of course, the stat that everybody's throwing out there is the fact that it is a offense that has a first-round player at every position. I don't know what that means, but I guess that's better than maybe not having first round. I just want good football players at the end of the day. But the key to 2016 wasn't just about personnel, okay? It was about the fact that Kyle Shanahan did a magnificent job of using that personnel and, spreading the wealth around. And remember the stat about Matt about how many different guys that he had thrown touchdown passes to? What was it? It was some ridiculous number, like 11 or 13 guys or something. I think they, even one of the offensive linemen had caught a touchdown for us, you know, in that season. You know, Kyle Shanahan's ability to get guys involved. Look, he made Taylor Gabriel times look like a star, you know, in that season. You know, Austin Hooper, even as a rookie with Jacob Tammy. Tammy played really well. They got a lot out of him. Then Hooper kind of stepped up as the season went along. And not only that, but think about a couple of the plays that were designed that ended up Hooper being so wide up. Listen, it was complete busted coverage in the two biggest plays that Austin Hooper had to start his rookie year. The Chicago Bears play to start that season, and the, what was it, the Oakland Raiders game where they had that big completion. So Shanahan did a masterful job. So while it's great to have personnel, and certainly that's the foundation point, and you want to start with that, especially when we're talking quarterback, I should say, you know, all of that is massively important. But you also have to have, okay, good, not true on, all right, good. I was going to say, good Lord. That'd be the last thing that we need is Calvin Ridley being gone. So good. But you have to have a guy who knows how to use that personnel. And obviously, Dirk Koetter is back here as the offensive coordinator. You know, let's face it, it was a very mixed bag offensively for this team last year. And it's a team that still had good personnel. It started off with Mohamed Sanu and Calvin Ridley and, you know, Julio Jones. And certainly Matt was a quarterback. And Devontae Freeman was back in the mix. And you drafted a running back in Kadri Allison. Hooper was, you know, back. So many things, but it just never materialized for whatever reason. Now, listen, there were times when Matt did not play well. No question about it. The fact that there were times Matt did not play well for this team. So he takes some responsibility for that as to why at times their offense didn't look like it did, you know, back in 2016. Okay? But this is where now that the pieces are in place and sort of, you know, this is where Dan and Thomas, yeah, they've gotten their guys, you know, in there. Now, to me, the pressure is on Dirk Koetter. Now the pressure is on Dirk Koetter. And maybe we're just not talking about Dirk enough and making sure to utilize his personnel, you know, properly. Obviously, we still don't know what Todd Gurley is and what he's going to be, okay? And he has not officially signed his contract yet. Not because Todd doesn't want to, but because the physicals have not been able to take place with Todd Gurley. So the Falcons are, you know, that contract won't get signed until the Falcons have a physical that reassures them. But you would certainly think that they had enough data and information. You don't go out and put out an idea of an offer saying 1 year, $6 million for a guy and think that you can't sign him because his injury is too significant. I would, listen, if it ends up being that Todd Gurley's not Atlanta Falcon because the injuries preclude them from wanting to sign him to a contract, that's a really bad job by Thomas and Dan. A really bad job. That if you rolled the dice on a guy that couldn't pass a physical and you end up kind of getting egg on your face by this contract. So I would hope that that's not the case. But, I mean, listen, anything is possible around here. But assuming Todd, you know, Todd Gurley is in the mix and ready to go and can be even, you know, honestly, like we talked about, I don't agree with Maurice Jones-Drew with the 1,200 rushing yards, 500 receiving yards. I'm not buying all that. I don't think Todd Gurley's that player anymore. I don't think that he can carry enough of the load to put up those kinds of numbers. But I do think if Todd Gurley just even replicated what he did last year, you know, if he got to about 900 yards, if he got 10 or 12 rushing touchdowns, if he could find maybe 300 receiving yards and maybe two or three touchdowns out of the backfield, okay, I'd take that. Because that would be a step up from what we had this past season, and especially with the idea of a guy who can get in the end zone. But this is where when you see guys like Laquon Treadwell, Todd Gurley, there's a lot of room to do a lot of different things with those guys. There's a lot of room to, you know, use Treadwell. We talked about you could run a jet sweep with him. You could throw him that bubble screen. He's big. He's physical down by the goal line. So, you know, when there's those plays when Julio Jones, for whatever oddball reason, isn't on the field, especially when they get in the red zone, you know, here's some guys that you can be creative with. Hayden Hurst is a guy who has a lot of talent, but maybe never really just kind of was the right fit in Baltimore, and other guys passed him by. And maybe he's playing with a chip on his shoulder saying, you know, I'm better than this. I'm a first-round pick. I think I'm better than this. Maybe Todd Gurley's playing with a chip on his shoulder and wants to show some things. But Todd can run. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. There's a lot of different ways. Just even as we sit here on April 2nd, the idea that this personnel can be used for a lot of different things. And the real key to me is they've got to get back to being great in the red zone. They've got to get back to being a great red zone offense. Okay, I don't want to worry about moving through the 20s and then we line up and kick a 38-yard field goal. I'm talking about with Treadwell and Gurley, okay, and Julio and Ridley and her. They need to be a great, not a good, but a great red zone offense. And that's where when that field shrinks and you don't have that kind of room, that's where your play caller has to get creative. Now, I'll also say, too, to that, when I say get creative, that's not shovel pass to Teron Ward. Remember that play against Philadelphia as one of the four down there deep in the playoffs? I don't want shovel pass to Teron Ward type of creative. I want smart play calling and using the assets that they have. You know, one of the things we've complained about is that it doesn't feel like that they throw to Julio enough in the red zone. That may be true. That may be fiction. But what do I always say here? Perception has the same effect as truth, and it doesn't feel like they go to Julio enough in the red zone. And I really truthfully don't care what Julio's touchdown numbers are as long as the team is scoring touchdowns. But when the Falcons don't score touchdowns and they don't score in the red zone, they don't score touchdowns in the red zone, then that's when you're going to say, okay, what do we got to do to go after Julio more? What do we got to do to get Julio the football more? If you're scoring lots of touchdowns like they did in 16, I'm not worried. I don't care if Julio catches 5, 6, 12, 14, whatever his number is what a number is. But if you're averaging 31, 32 a game, I'm not going to worry about his touchdown number as long as they're scoring. The problem is when they don't get it, then you got to start saying, okay, where's Julio at in all of this? So I think the guy that we really have to keep our eyes on is Dirk Koetter. And calling, you know, and using his personnel the way that Shanahan did and being creative. And I think that's going to be one of the big questions as we get through camp and preseason about how he uses his personnel. All right, when we get back, Iowa State's athletic director, among some others, are talking about pay cuts. And there's a survey among ADs saying about pay cuts. Well, yeah, duh. Don't we know this? We'll talk about that next. It is the John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you here on a Thursday night. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you here on a Thursday night. Hey, make sure you stay connected with us by going to the App Store and downloading the radio.com app. Click on 92.9 The Game, and you can listen to us while you're home. Put that on your smartphone, your smart speakers, your Sega Genesis, Commodore 64, text instruments, calculator, boombox, Walkman, whatever you got for a device, make sure you download it to there. 404-741-0929, that's the phone line. That's also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You can be a part of the show that way. Give us a follow on social media. The station's at 929 The Game. Catch me at JMCH316, at JMCH316. He is at Jarvis D90. We'll talk to a D. Orlando Ledbetter coming up at 8:20 on the show tonight, but The athletic director for the Fightin' Dave Archers today, Jamie Pollard, the Iowa State athletic director, was on a conference call today talking to reporters for quite a while, actually over an hour today. And one of the things that he said on this call today was the fact that the Iowa State Athletics Department will not seek financial relief from the university, from the state government, or anywhere else that involves public money. It says the athletic department will clean up its own fallout from the cancellation of basketball tournaments and also from a lot of expenditures that were happening during better financial times. Then he put the caveat on it, unless there's a complete shutdown of the football season. Quote, that's a complete game changer, unquote. Okay? Now, Iowa State is instituting, like what a lot of places are right now, that they're going to have salaries for coaches and administrative staff, which will include Pollard, that will have salary reductions by 10% on a one-year basis. Now, to put it in perspective, Pollard makes $757,000 a year. So basically, he will lose $76,000, so he's still going to make, what, $660,000 or $680,000 this year, even with the 10% reduction. He says, I know from talking to many of my peers that they want to do just what we did. We weren't first because we wanted to be first. We were first because we have a system that allowed us to be first. And this also dovetails into a study that was done, and I should say more like a survey that was done, that was sponsored by the Lead One Association, which represents athletic directors at the NCAA's 130 FBS schools, and TeamWorks, which provides internal communication software for many college sports programs. And the conclusion in the survey was the fact that ADs of programs, of FBS programs, said that, you know, there's going to have to be some belt tightening, which is going to mean a lot of salary reduction. And this is a salvo to make sure that, you know, the good times can continue. Because it was announced today that Old Dominion, say what you will, I mean, you know, again, it's Old Dominion, but they were cutting two sports today. They had eliminated, there was wrestling and something else. They cut two of their sports. And we talked about this the other night. Remember when I told you about keeping up to date? You know how we do that talking points before, you know, it gets to page one, 3 to 6? Okay, we were talking about this the other night about keep your eye on this story about the reduction of, you know, minimum sports and things like that. You know, will programs cut and scale back? Well, Old Dominion announced that there are, you know, they're going to cut, you know, a couple of sports. And look, this is why I 100% believe, and we're going to talk in What's Bugging Chuckery about the response to Kirk Herbstreit's comments from the new coach over at Missouri, but it's why I don't believe football will be canceled. Because if you cancel football, you will completely cripple college athletics across the nation to where some programs will have a difficult time coming back. Now, besides the fact that the you know, the idea that the majority said that there needs to be salary cuts, there needs to be a reduction in salaries and things like that, 40% of the respondents said they believe or strongly believe that high earners should voluntarily offer to make a personal financial sacrifice during the crisis. Okay, there was a couple of other things that were interesting as well. It said 70% of the respondents said their worst-case scenarios for 2019-20 fiscal year involved a revenue decrease of no more than 20%. Now, here's what you got to understand, is that is a with-football number, okay? That's a with-football number. And there was an interesting stat line put out by, what's his name, Ross Dellinger? And I think, haven't we had him on the show, or we've talked with him before or something? He had an interesting stat about from his time working at LSU about sports that make money and sports that don't make money. And he gave the profit and loss statement, and I want to say it was for LSU in the 2017-2018 fiscal year. There were three sports that LSU had on campus that made a profit. That was baseball, which had a $57,000-$58,000 profit. Yes, I said that right, $57,000, $58,000 profit. Basketball made about $1.6 million in profit, and football made like $35 million or $32 million or something like that in profit, some huge number, and everything else didn't make money. And so if schools are going to avoid trying to cut, this is going to have to happen, and maybe even bigger than some of the initial things. With all due respect, I understand. Listen, it's another man's money, and I get that. But $75,000, okay, of AD money, isn't a whole lot of money that you can recoup when you're talking about the millions that circulate from basketball or especially football. There were more than 60% of respondents in this survey that said that they could have revenue cuts that could even be above, or they said revenue decrease let me read what they say here. But more than 60% of respondents said their worst case scenarios for 2021 fiscal year involved a revenue decrease of at least 20%, including 35% who said their worst case involved a decrease of more than 30%. And that's without football, as we said. This one is the one that's interesting. More than 55% of respondents said their programs do not have a financial reserve to help them through this situation. Now, this was done back in March 23rd through March 27th. They had 111 of the ADs out of the 130 of FBS ADs that responded from it. 48 were from Power 5 schools, 62 from schools of the Group of Five. So, they got a pretty good response. I mean, you only had, not even 20%, that didn't respond to this. So it is interesting because the stat to really watch for is the fact that 55% that don't have any financial reserve to help them through this situation, they have to play football. They have to find a way. And if that means they have to start the season later, they have to push things back, they have to do revised schedule, these programs can't go without football. And I'm not saying, trying to, root and say, hey, we got football and things like that. But this is why I disagree with Herb Street's assessment. The financial impact of not having football. You're already going to have athletic departments that are going to have 20, 30% losses in revenue. And that's with football. If you take away the football aspect of things from these programs, it will cripple them. And it doesn't matter if the Iowa State athletic director takes a $75,000 cut. With all due respect, and again, I'm saying with all due respect, it's a man's money. I get that. But his $75,000 is not going to sway the books of Iowa State. Unless you're telling me Nick Saban is taking, half the money. And by the way, the thing you got to remember is, the state itself is only responsible for a small portion. Remember when Mark Richt was at Georgia and they did those surveys about, the highest paid state employees? Mark Richt's salary at Georgia is like $500,000 because that's like the highest that a state employee could make at the time. All the other money comes from, Under Armour or Adidas and this and that. You know what I mean? Like there's all these ancillary outside things that contribute to why Mark Richt makes whatever he makes, $3 or $4 million, let's say, at the time that he was wrapping up at Georgia. So this, again, is one of those things that athletic directors are letting without necessarily going on record. And look, we're going to hear more about this. You're going to have more coaches and stuff like that. I mean, with all due respect to Dabo Sweeney and Nick Saban, who make gazillions of dollars and things like that. I mean, there'll be reductions and stuff like that. There'll be no pay increases. Some of these schools will do what they have to do to get by in the short term. But I can tell you, there is no possible way that some of these athletic programs can survive the idea of, let's just go a whole year without football and basketball and have nothing coming in. Like I said, use the LSU example about all the other sports becoming losses except for baseball, and their $58,000, which could basically buy Jarvis and I to come and be there. But the money just won't be there to support athletic programs. And you know how these things work. Once you start to cut, you never get it back, right? I mean, once they can cut something and there's more revenue in the coffers, because here's the thing that they're going to look at is, what do we have to do to keep revenue on hand to avoid having something like this happen again where we have to slash and burn? I think there's going to be a lot of people in the world of business that look and say, how do we put together a fund or whatever like that to have operating capital so that this doesn't happen again? When nobody sees this coming, it completely comes out of nowhere, and the idea of what it could do. So I don't know if you want to call it, you know, positive news that programs would be in some dire need if they don't play college football, and that's the reason why we're going to get it. Spin it, I guess, however you want. But like I said, at the end of the day, I think the idea of not having football, especially in college, is going to be too crippling. All right, when we get back, Dante Fowler joined our midday show of Andy and Randy today. We're going to play several clips. We will break it all down. We will chop it up, whatever they say nowadays out there on them streets. We'll do all of that next. It is the John Chuckery Show, live with you on a Thursday night, Sports Radio Nights on the Game and on the Radio.com app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.